you've kind of been alluding to this big story, and now here it is. So this is going to be a little deeper dive really to explain this. And let's start the story in 2018. So remember 2018, this is a year before the world ever heard of COVID-19, SARS-CoV-2. We had Johns Hopkins, and they put forth a report. And this report was titled Technologies to Address Global Catastrophic Biological Risks. So they had all of these great technologies they were assessing to address these risks. And in 2018, this is literally a year, almost a year to the day that Johns Hopkins had Event 201, which was a fictitious coronavirus that swept across the world and caused all kinds of lockdowns and deaths. So 1 year before that, they start searching for these great new technologies. One of them, one of the key ones in this report is this. I'll read right from the report. Self-spreading vaccines, also known as transmissible or self-propagating vaccines, are genetically engineered to move through populations in the same way as communicable diseases, but rather than causing disease, they confer protection. Now, fast forward, the world has now heard of COVID. We're searching for a vaccine. It's 2020. The Telegraph puts out this article. Could self-spreading vaccines stop a coronavirus pandemic? So understand, this idea, this technology was in the mix for a possible chosen technology. We could have all had this technology already in 2020, but it was not chosen then. Didn't mean it went away. So we go into this article here and it says this. Dr. Amish Adalia, a senior scholar at Johns Hopkins University, says the outbreak of the coronavirus may have come too soon for the technology. Dr. Adalia says the method of vaccination will throw serious medical ethics questions. His view is endorsed by the Department of Health, which explored the technology in a presentation late last year. In a study from November, the department stated that self-spreading techniques could eliminate vaccine delay. So I want everyone to pay attention to
this.
First time they talk about this.
Everyone watching this show right now, that's you. You're a problem now. They have a solution. They're going to create a man-made virus that will sweep the earth. They'll call it a vaccine. They're now directly in competition with God himself. Their virus beats out, the natural virus. And this is how you're going to be protected. And there'll be nothing you can do to stop it. All right, everybody, just let this sink in for a moment. Just Jeffrey, let's just give everyone a moment of silence right now to recognize that this vaccine is so close, they almost thought it was ready 2 years ago to release during COVID. But they have a few things just getting in their way that they're working on. Think about it. It's game over. It's game over for anyone that doesn't want this man-made crap inside of your body. All right, take us. Scare us some more, Jeffrey.
There,
here we go.
Right. I'm just going to give you some facts. So you can see there that it says vaccine delay. It's right there, front and center in the article. This isn't a side note. This isn't some theoretical thing that may or may not happen. It's saying it right there. Now, it goes on to say in this article, the presentation also stated that such vaccines did very little harm.
There it is, rare, small. Go ahead.
That's right. In comparison to a pandemic. However, the department highlighted a number of ethical issues that arise with self-spreading vaccines, one of which is that it is less lethal, not non-lethal, meaning it can still kill. Some people will die who otherwise would have lived, even though fewer people die overall, it's stated. There's this greater good conversation, and it's front and center behind closed doors, but when you see it spilling out into the public in articles like this and studies, that's when you really got to start paying attention.
Well, it's what I said at the top of the show, right? It's what I said at the top of the show. The whole language is changing, folks. They now know the cat's out of the bag. They had a vaccine that injures. It also didn't work, didn't stop transmission. They can't get around it now. So this whole idea, remember, the entire theme of vaccines, when you all got them for your kids, I'm not blaming you. You were being told they're safe and effective. They're safe and effective. They're safe and effective. It doesn't harm anybody. Stops disease. Just like this says, it stops disease, except for those people that we know we're going to kill. We know it's going to kill some people. It's going to swell some people's brains. It's going to cause swelling in some people's hearts. Others will have cancer. Others will have blood clots. This is how this goes. No one wants to add all of those things together. It's rare and therefore it's acceptable. And what they're saying is, but, it is going to be forced upon you. So informed consent is going to be an issue.
Right. And there's always those issues. Public health officials know that. Medical professionals know that. They just don't want you to know that. And that's why the line has not been some people will be hurt. It's just safe and effective. No more conversation around that. That's what it's been for a very long time. And then COVID came along. So we have this window here. Now, in 2014, this is when some of these conversations really started to be supercharged. So there was an opinion paper published in the journal Cell, and it's titled The Case for Transmissible Antivirals to Control Population-Wide Infectious Disease. So they're kind of just mulling around this idea, talking about it. It says infectious disease control faces significant challenges, including how to therapeutically target the highest risk population, circumvent behavioral barriers, there it is again, and overcome pathogen persistence and resistance mechanisms. And it goes on to say, we review a recently proposed solution to overcome these challenges, antivirals that transmit by piggybacking on viral replication. These proposed antivirals, termed therapeutic interfering particles or TIPs, are engineered molecular parasites of viruses that are designed to steal replication resources from the wild-type virus. Lead author of that paper is a person named Lior Weinberger. He is from the Gladstone Institute. The Gladstone Institute launched its own virology and immunology safety lab in 1991 to address the AIDS epidemic. So in that 2014 paper, they're talking about using these to address AIDS. But then COVID came along, and you kind of understand where this was pointed, because that was the big meal ticket there. Now, 2 years later in 2016, the military starts to get involved in this. We have DARPA once again, something that continually comes up in our reporting when we dig a little deeper. Here's the article from their own website, DARPA's website, co-evolving antivirals aim to keep ahead of fast-changing viruses. And it says in there, you can see the messaging is now starting to get a little slick. You can think of these tip-filled envelopes as tiny Trojan horses, but instead of containing warriors, they contain pretenders that ultimately outnumber real disease-causing viruses and interfere with their ability to replicate, Gimlet said. He's the DARPA program manager on this. And because tips are made of genetic material, he added, they will be subject to mutation and diversification over time, just as the genome of real viruses are. Once we develop a tip that works for a given virus, we expect it to generate a steady stream of variants, so there will always be a population of tips with the right genetic stuff to disrupt any new strains of the virus that may arise. So now here, we'll pause for a second, and we'll give Lior Weinberger, one of the key people in this technology, the floor. This is him in 2016 talking about engineering these viruses. Take a listen.
We knew that these long strings of DNA had parasites of themselves that were just a partial string, about this long. Okay? And so what we're doing, our genetic engineering, so this is the full-length virus that takes over the cell, turns it into a factory to make more of itself. This is now a parasite of this. This short piece doesn't have the code to make more of its nanomachines. They're all coming from the full-length virus. But what it does have is the little instruction to itself to get inside. So now, when that factory, the cell, is making these viral particles, what comes out is a virus carrying the short parasite piece. And since it's so much shorter, it's made much more efficiently, this small parasite piece. We call these interfering particles, or therapeutic interfering particles, because they interfere with this long piece. There's much more of this. It competes with this long piece to get into the shell. And since there's so much more of it, it does a much better job competing. It's a competitive inhibitor. So now this cell, which was a factory to produce virus, has become a factory to produce the therapeutic particle.
Yep.
So we have Lior Weinberger. Now he goes on to become the co-founder of VX Bioscience. VX Bioscience gets a contract from the US government and DARPA to start doing studies. So this is the actual federal contract here, and you can read in the description of this. It states this, the key innovations of this approach are that these therapeutic parasites establish co-evolutionary arms races, co-evolving with wild-type virus to overcome resistance. Number two, replicate and self-renew, acting as a single administration therapies that circumvent compliance issues. There it is again. And number three, spread via the exact same risk factors and transmission routes as SARS-CoV-2, autonomously utilizing super spreaders to deploy the intervention, thereby circumventing manufacturing at scale and rollout challenges. That's people that don't want to take it. So he gets the contract.
So they turn people into super spreaders. We spread it all to each other. We are now spreading this man-made form of the virus that can mutate just like the virus, take on attributes of the virus, and then keep spreading inside of our bodies, ready for every mutation and going on to the next person. We're talking about a man-made rewrite of the immune system of every human being on the planet. Okay.
That's right. Lior Weinberger, he does the study with his team, and then he does a TED Talk to sell his product once it's finished, and it looked like this.
There's no guarantee that the vaccine that we produce 12 months from now will match the mutated virus. We're always playing catch-up, and this is the scenario we're in every time there's an outbreak. Our quarantines are porous, our medical responses are flat-footed. The fundamental problem that we face in controlling these outbreaks is that viruses and other infections do two things really well. They mutate and they transmit. Our medical tools do neither of these two things. 20 years ago, I had a radical idea to use the viruses themselves as therapies, as building blocks for therapies. To build therapies that could mutate and transmit. The reason I'm here today is because for the first time in 20 years, we got it to work. And this is the first time I'm sharing it publicly. Last two times I did this, I cried, so...
I want people to take that in just for a second, because I've talked about this before, this idea that people are evil or that they're evil, they're trying to reduce the population. I think you can see inside of this guy, like, he's really heartfelt, he's emotional about this incredible achievement he's just made, because technically he's just replaced God. For those that believe in God, this idea that there's something that holds us all together and, you know, knows, counts the hairs on our heads and would never really let a virus, hasn't so far ever wiped our species out, ever. But this guy's just made his own virus that he thinks everyone in the world should catch to make them healthier. He's really excited about it. He'll probably take it himself. But I just want to point out that it's this kind of misguided stupidity. This is a man who stares through a microscope all the time and has lost all ability to look at the periphery of all the side effects that could possibly happen here. And this is the problem with science, especially science in a world where it becomes illegal to call it out and say, I don't like this idea, I think it's dangerous.
And, you know, this is also a factor when conversations around vaccine safety aren't permitted at the academic level, which they're not. You get this kind of idea that everything's good. It's all a go. It's safe and effective. Let's just keep building these things. So we have in 2021 the paper on that study that he's talking about, identification of a therapeutic interfering particle, a single dose SARS-CoV-2 antiviral intervention with a high barrier to resistance, also published in Cell. And so they used hamsters in this one. They used nasal inoculation of this tip therapy. And it says here in the discussion, together, these data demonstrate that a synthetic subgenomic viral deletion mutant can conditionally replicate to durably suppress a virus infection, i.e. SARS-CoV-2, in vivo, thereby constituting a therapeutic interfering particle tip. So what does the U.S. government have to do with this? Well, they put forward in 2022 the Prevent Pandemics Act. And in that Prevent Pandemics Act, in Section 506K, to be exact, they're looking for platform technologies to prevent the next pandemic. And when they find some platform technologies, they say a drug that demonstrates that the platform technology has the potential to be incorporated in or utilized by more than one drug without an adverse effect on quality, manufacturing, or safety. When they find that, they're going to fast track this thing and they're going to choose it for the next pandemic. So the U.S. government is already locked and loaded to do this. But now 2023 comes along and this article is what we're seeing. So the COVID vaccine's already been out there. It's old news. Warp speed isn't fast enough. The need for variant-proof therapeutics. Well, if you look at who wrote this, it was Ariel Weinberger. And you may recognize that last name as somebody familiar. This is him. He's CEO and founder of Autonomous Therapeutics. in Bloomberg in 2016 wrote an article on he and his brother, and it said this, the headline, "To fight a virus, get a virus. Military bets on mutant pathogen." And you look in the article, it says, "A pair of brothers working in laboratories on opposite coasts of the U.S. are brewing a new approach to fighting viruses, one that's drawn interest from the military for protection against the threat of infections such as Zika or Ebola." So we have Autonomous Therapeutics. They get an award as well from DARPA, and you can see it here. Remember, his brother already has SARS-CoV-2 kind of sewed up. So this is his first in-human therapeutic interfering particle tip targeting a respiratory virus. So now they're going for respiratory viruses in general. And you can see here some of the, these are the patents. If you want to get into looking at those for the researchers out there, this is one of them, therapeutic interfering particles for coronavirus. This is Leo Weinberger's patent and another individual. But it says on this patent, if you look into it, it says, "This invention was made with government support, awarded by the National Institutes of Health and awarded by DOD DARPA. The government has certain rights in the invention." So keep an eye on that, because the government actually has rights in this. And then there's another patent as well.
So then ask yourself, let's just take this for a second as we start to put these building blocks together. If your government is invested in it and your government is the one with the regulatory agency supposed to test if it's safe and tell you we don't think this product is safe, now you not only have a problem where the pharmaceutical industry is doing its own building and billing and its own safety studies on its own product. Now your government is the pharmaceutical industry. Your government is now the one making these products for you. So who are you going to trust to do a proper safety study?
Right. Well said. So really to wrap this idea up here, to understand this, nature is continually seeking a competitive advantage. So what this technology is doing is it's mutating, it diversifies, it's literally designed to have a competitive advantage, and it continually creates variants. So the question would be, what happens for cross-viral recombination? What if it reverts back? You're giving it its competitive advantage. So I'm sure everyone out there can think of a million other ways that this can go wrong. But did you think of this one? This one's right from our friends at the World Economic Forum. You can go to their own website and read this. It says, "Are viruses actually vital for our existence?" So it says in this article, the 21 viral types that wreak havoc with the human body represent an insignificant fraction of the 100 million viral types on Earth. Most viruses are actually vital to our very existence. It goes on to say this, it breaks it down. Algae and plants are primary producers, the foundation of the world's ecosystems. Using sunlight, they turn raw materials like carbon dioxide, nitrogen, and phosphorus into organic matter. In turn, they're eaten by herbivores, which are in turn eaten by other animals, and so on. Energy and nutrients are passed on up the food chain until animals die. But what ensures that the primary producers get the raw elements they need to get started? The answer hinges on the virus's relationship with bacteria. So now we're getting something in there. What's the one thing that is protecting us from this tech? Informed consent. And this tech,
that's what they said at the beginning, right? Is they're saying, you know, the one issue is you are going to kill some people. And once you release this, by the way, let's make it really clear here, Jeffrey. As soon as they do a trial of this product, it's all over. This isn't something where we get to say, oh, we took 20 people and gave them a self-spreading vaccine that, as he put, 12 months down the road will be capable of mutating with that year's virus, meaning this thing is never going to leave your body. This is a rewrite, a permanent rewrite of your immune system saying that you weren't designed right. This guy is going to redesign your body for every future virus there is. And as you're pointing out here with what the WHO is saying, he's saying this tip, because it's shorter, it's going to get in the cell faster than the long DNA strand of a regular virus. It's always going to outcompete. It's always going to get to the cell first. It's going to make sure that you never get that virus. And what you're saying is there's only about 30 viruses we care about. There's millions keeping us alive. And what happens if this technology suddenly starts outcompeting every single virus there is? You know what that is? That is a mass extinction event. That is the end of all life as we know it. And the only thing protecting us right now is we've got this little pesky idea of informed consent, which means that you should consent to anything that's going to happen to your body. Now, mandates get in the way of that, and we're fighting to make sure that every state, this is why we're trying to free the five, but this bypasses all of that. Even a trial of this, and all informed consent is out the window, and now you are, in a sense, a natural cyborg. Your body is going to be changed forever, potentially impervious to any virus, even the good ones. So go on. What are we saying about informed consent? Go ahead.
Yeah. For the few people left out there that think the FDA or the CDC's ACIP committee will stop this, remember, they said we need to approve the vaccine, the booster vaccine, to figure out what it does, to figure out if it's effective, if it's safe. It doesn't work like that with this type of technology. So you have literally this tech is designed from its inception with a prime feature to circumvent informed consent. People need to really understand that. And then what did the FDA just do? We reported on this 2 weeks ago. This is it right here. FDA eases informed consent requirements for minimal risk trials. So can this be put under a minimal risk trial? Well, hey, everything in this nasal vaccine is you can find in the body. It's all natural. So there's really not much of a risk. And it's prophylactic. So it's supposed to help people. I mean, I feel like they could talk themselves into any type of idea to make this minimal risk. So this is why this is a very important topic, perhaps one of the most important topics we've talked about, Del, to really get on people's radar.
I think it is. I mean, look at, you know that the FDA is lining up for exactly this. Take away informed consent now. All we have to do as a government agency, remember the ones invested in this technology, if we determine to tell the world it's safe, then we now can circumvent informed consent. You don't need to be informed about something that's safe. And now everyone in the world is going to get it. You know, this reminds me, Jeffrey, as I think of this. When we think of, sure, we're thinking worst case scenario. I am thinking worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. Maybe it only just stops coronaviruses and every coronavirus into the future, and it just sort of stops there. This little tip floats around. It's focused on COVID. But it says it's designed to mutate. It says it's able to take on, you know, the different attributes of every variation it comes in contact with. And we know that viruses and bacteria are now interacting in ways that we never quite understood before. The deeper we get in, the less we seem to know. And it really reminds me of that scene in Jurassic Park, which I want to play for everybody. Yes, this is a movie. Yes, this is fiction. But I think Michael Crichton hit it on the head when he tried to make us think about this little warning right here.
How do you know they're all female? Does somebody go out in the park and pull up the dinosaur skirts?
We control their chromosomes. It's really not that difficult. All vertebrate embryos are inherently female anyway. They just require an extra hormone given at the right developmental stage to make them male. We simply deny them that.
Deny them that?
John, the kind of control you're attempting is, it's not possible. Listen, if there's one thing the history of evolution has taught us, it's that life will not be contained. Life breaks free, it expands to new territories, and it crashes through barriers painfully, maybe even dangerously, but, well, there it is.
There it is.
You're implying that a group composed entirely of female animals will breed?
No, I'm simply saying that life finds a way.
It's really not a laughing matter, even though that clip, I mean, we are talking about playing with nature in a way that's never been done before. And I am telling you, folks, take this very seriously. They're taking away your informed consent. In France, they're going to take away my ability to warn you of anything. And then they're going to release a vaccine the next time that they have a pandemic that you can't escape, that everyone will be infected by. And now man-made viruses are supposed to be better than the natural ones, the ones that have never wiped our species out, have never taken us out. There's never been a pandemic that eradicated our species from the planet. But you have a interfering particle in your body that starts interfering with the nature and the evolution that we've been a part of. That could literally spell the end of our species. Jeffrey, incredible reporting. So brilliant and truly horrifying. Thanks for the great work that you're doing. Hopefully, I'll see you next week.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
All right. Take care. I want to bring on our lawyer, Aaron Seary, that actually sort of really tipped us off to this in the investigations that we've been doing and the FOIA requests we've been bringing. This is where we sort of really saw this pop up. It started, Aaron, if I'm correct, we sort of stumbled upon this when we were looking into chemtrails. And part of our question was, is there anything being atomized? Are they looking at atomized, you know, spraying vaccines in the air? And through that investigation, we stumbled onto this little thing about self-spreading vaccines. Am I right about that? That's sort of how we sort of stumbled in here?
Yeah, in the research regarding aerosolized vaccines, and there are all kinds of studies about releasing from airplanes of various what they would call vaccines to inoculate the population and so forth. And we came across the information you just covered in that segment.
So, I mean, when we talk about this sort of threat, I mean, we put out a press release on this. ICANN uncovers a potential next level threat, inhalable self-spreading vaccines that spread like a virus. When I think about this, Aaron, one of the things, the challenges we have, I mean, you've been so amazing in the work that you've done for ICANN. We are bringing lawsuits. We're bringing transparency. We're finding out that they're lying to us about the safety of products that are out there. We're revealing what they know and don't know. You've put on the stand some of the leading vaccine creators and vaccine program designers in Dr. Stanley Plotkin, Dr. Catherine Edwards. But in this case, if we are doing a FOIA request to find out if this was safe when it was given to people, even in a trial, it's already over. We've lost. Once this technology goes into trial, it's all over. What the hell do we do about that?
Well, we are, ICANN Legislate, which is the sister group to ICANN, the C3. The ICANN Legislate is the C4, so it engages in legislative efforts, something that ICANN itself can't do. But the ICANN Legislate actually has an entire initiative around addressing self-spreading vaccines. And the real issue, and I think you hit it on the head, is that when most drugs are released, therefore, usually a small segment of the population, already sick segment of the population, current vaccines are for healthy parts of the population, and they're given typically to, or they try to give it to most children for many of the vaccines, which obviously can be an issue. If you get that wrong once, you could decimate or cause issues with a huge portion of the population. But even there, if you have a serious issue, many still refuse. That's what informed consent's about. But with this product, the whole idea is they release it to basically one person and it spreads to every single person on the globe. So if they mess it up one time, just once, it's it. They can mess up the entire world. And to your point, how do you really test it? Are they going to take 10 people, put them in an isolation cube for a decade, give it to one, the other nine get it, and then see what the long-term consequences are? No, they're never going to do that because that's not profitable.
Right.
What they're going to do is something that's going to be, you know,
well, as they said, faster than warp speed is what they're counting on. And, you know, as we report today, what we're looking at now, we just saw in the articles coming out about the largest study now done on the safety of the COVID vaccine. As it turns out, it does swell your heart. It can swell your brain. It can and does cause blood clots. It does cause transverse myelitis and Guillain-Barré syndrome and all of these really, you know, disastrous issues. And then when you look at them describing this self-spreading vaccine, they say, well, it'll stop disease. I mean, there'll be some people that have a reaction. You know, certainly some people will die from this thing. And it what's so mind blowing, Aaron, as we do this work is that sort of callous idea that if it can kill some people, what stops it from killing all people? I mean, obviously someone's having a bad reaction to this. Something's not working right. What if that part of it that's not working right doesn't work right for like the majority or all of us?
Right. But you know what might even be the biggest victim, even if it doesn't end up having some real physical harm, why that's widespread, if they ever release this thing, it's going to be civil individual rights. Because the more you engage in conduct, the government and they're participating in this, that takes away people's right to informed consent, the more you have to then censor them, you have to silence them, you have to suppress their speech. You don't have to suppress people's speech when it comes to most drugs.
Right.
Right? Because the government's not involved. But you do with vaccines, the moment they tell you, no, you must take it to go to school, must go to work. Here they're going to release a product where you're going to have no choice effectively but to take it. That is the ultimate crushing of individual and civil rights. And always commensurate with that throughout history is the government's need to suppress your ability to dissent, to oppose, to speak out against it.